So thanks to thank the organizers for inviting me. Well, I'll start. I'm just going to set some notation first. X mu will be a standard probability space, and G a discrete group, acting by measure-preserving transformations. And I'll call this a dynamical system. Two systems are isomorphic if you have a measure space isomorphism that intertwines the actions. And the main problem I want to address is we want to classify dynamical systems, which is known to be impossible in the broad sense, but we'll look at specific dynamical systems or specific classes. Especially important are Bernoulli shifts. So this is an important class which will serve as a primary example. Let's say K kappa is a standard probability space. K to the G is just the set of all functions from G to K, and it has a product measure, and G acts on it by shifting. So X is in this space, so you can just shift these functions. And this is called the Bernoulli shift over the group with the base space, K kappa. Okay. So von Neumann asked in the 30s, this is a little bit of background. If you're unfamiliar with this story, if you're familiar with it, I'll get to new things soon. So let's say that K just has n elements and kappa is the uniform probability measure. Then we call it the full n shift. And von Neumann asked, is the full 2 shift over Z isomorphic to the full 3 shift? The history is that, at the time, only spectral theory invariants were known for dynamical systems, and it was known that these two systems are spectrally isomorphic. So it was a natural question to ask. Here's a brief introduction or review. Let's say that X is a point that's not known to us, and there's a subset of X, and we want to say how much information do we gain by being told that X is an E, if we don't know that, you know, if we don't know anything about X. So we'll call it I of E for the amount of information, and let's say it should only depend on the measure of the set. So it's a function of a real variable. And I'd like to say that it should be non-negative. Let's say it's continuous. But the last criteria is that if you consider I on the intersection of two independent events, then the amount of information that you gain by learning that two independent events have occurred should be the sum of the information. So it has to be the logarithmic function for some base. It doesn't matter which base we choose. I'll say that an observable is any measurable map from my space X into a finite or countable set. Okay. And the entropy or the Shannon entropy of an observable is the average amount of information that you gain by learning the value of phi. So, if we have a random x, we know what phi of x is. That gives us some information about where x is. So the average information, the entropy is this. If we have two observables, we can join them together, which kind of means like making both observations at the same time. If we have a single transformation, then the entropy rate is defined like this. We just have we simply join all of these observables. You know, we're looking at the time translates of our point X, random point X, and then observing it for times from minus n to n and dividing by one by the number of times, 1 over 2n plus 1. Okay. Well, we'll need to look at specific observables, kinds of observables. And to explain, if we have any system like this over any group, and we have an observable, then we can map X into A to the G, just the set of maps from, which is the set of maps from G to A, by this formula that phi of X is the function which takes G to phi of G inverse X. And this is an equivariant map. We'll say that phi is a generator, or generates the system, if this gives us an isomorphism from this measure space to this measure space with the push-forward measure. So in other words, if the sigma algebra that's generated by C and the group action is the sigma algebra of all measurable sets up to measure zero. Okay, so Kolmogorov proved that if you have a transformation, and if you have two generators, and these are finite entropy, finite Shannon entropy, then the entropy rates are the same. And so we call that the entropy of the action, or the entropy of the system. So this is all review, but I'll get to new things very shortly. And Sinai observed that, or proved, that if phi is any finite entropy observable, then you always have this inequality. So therefore, we might as well just define the entropy to be the soup over all observables. And this is the classical definition. Okay. Oh, yeah, so for Bernoulli shifts, we have a specific observable which just tells us what is the value of at the identity element. And so we have something called the base entropy, which is the entropy of this base space, which is defined like this, and it's equal, well, its entropy is equal to the entropy of that observable in the case of Z. So you have the entropy rate of the Bernoulli shift is the entropy of the space space, and therefore, two Bernoulli shifts, if they're isomorphic, then they have to have the same base entropy. And the two, in general, the full N shift has entropy log N. So you can distinguish the two shift from the three shift. Okay, so what I'd like to talk about next is the converse, and also what happens when Z is replaced by by some other group, and that's really the main part of my talk will be about other groups. Okay. I'll say that, maybe I should just pause for questions, if there are any. Okay, so I'll say a group is Ornstein if the converse holds. So if whenever we have two standard probability spaces and they have the same entropy, then the same base entropy, then the Bernoulli shift over the first has to be isomorphic to the Bernoulli shift over the second. Okay, so no finite group can be Ornstein. That's just an easy observation, but it's worth pointing out, I think. So Ornstein's famous theorem is, or at least one of them, is that the integers have this property. Okay, and then we also know that infinite amenable groups have this property. Moreover, it's an interesting observation that if you have a group that contains an Ornstein subgroup, then it itself is Ornstein. Because once you have an isomorphism on you can take the isomorphism that you get from the subgroup and you can apply it coset by coset and get an isomorphism for the whole group. So in particular, if your group contains any infinite cyclic subgroup, it has this property. So free groups and lots of groups, right? Okay, it's not known whether or not every countably infinite group is Ornstein. interesting and curious question. Well, okay, so in particular, Ornstein proved that the Bernoulli shifts are completely classified by their entropy. He proved a lot more, of course, that, they developed this whole machine which establishes that, in particular, that a lot of classical dynamical systems are isomorphic to Bernoulli shifts, such as hyperbolic toral automorphisms, Markov chains, mixing Markov chains, and many others. Okay. the next part of my story is what happened for amenable groups. And the first paper in the literature, at least that I'm aware of, is this paper of Kiefer in 1975, where he generalizes the concept of entropy to an action of an amenable group. And in particular, gets a Kolmogorov type theorem. Ornstein and Weiss's paper proves the converse. So we know that Bernoulli shifts over an infinite amenable group are classified by entropy. But what if G is non-amenable? They ask this question at the very end of their paper. They presented a curious example which suggested to many people that maybe there wasn't a good definition of entropy for non-amenable groups. Here's how it goes. Suppose we have two dynamical systems and we have a measurable map which takes the measure of one to the other and intertwines the action, but doesn't have to be invertible. So it doesn't have to be an isomorphism. Okay, this is a factor map. If G is an amenable group, then entropy does not increase under factor maps. That's an easy consequence of the definition. And the full N shift has entropy log N. So the 2 shift cannot factor over the 4 shift. But Ornstein and Weiss observed that they gave an example where for the rake 2 free group, the 2 shift does factor over the 4 shift. And this is their example. It's very simple. So here's the Cayley graph of a rank 2 free group. And let's say we have a typical element of 0, 1 to the F. So that just means that above every vertex, we have a 0 or a 1. Yeah. Whatever it is. And then what we'll do over here is we'll take this element and we'll add it to the one that's right vertically adjacent to it. So I'll get a 1 over here. And I'll take this one and I'll add it to the one that's horizontally adjacent to it on the right. So I'll get a 0. And I'll just do that everywhere. This gives me a factor map from z mod 2z to the f to z mod 2z times z mod 2z to the f. And it's actually a factor map. It takes the 2 shift onto the 4 shift. By the way, you can think of z mod 2z to the f as a compact group, obviously, and this is a compact group, and so this is a group homomorphism. It's surjective, so it's taking Haar measure to Haar measure. Well, starting from this example, Karen Ball proved that, in fact, if G has infinitely many n's, then the 2 shift over G factors onto every Bernoulli shift. And moreover, what's more interesting, I think, is that if G is any non-amenable group, then there's some number M such that the 2 to the M shift factors onto all the Bernoulli shifts. Okay, and I proved that if G contains a non-abelian free subgroup, then every non-trivial Bernoulli shift factors onto every non-trivial Bernoulli shift. So they all factor onto each other. We don't know yet whether or not this is true without the without this hypothesis. Maybe if G is any non-amenable group, then every Bernoulli shift should over G should factor onto all the other Bernoulli shifts. It seems reasonable. Okay, well, so if you believe that that in any entropy theory, entropy should be non-increasing under factor maps, and that the full n shift should have entropy log n, then you would have to conclude that there is no a good entropy theory for free groups or, in fact, for any non-amenable group. But the main point of my talk is that, in fact, there is a good entropy theory for SOFA groups. This is a large class of groups that contains all countable subgroups of GLNC, for example. So it contains free groups. And using this new entropy, we can prove that Kolmogorov's direction holds for any of these groups. So so if you have one Bernoulli shift isomorphic to another, then the entropies of their bases have to be equal. Okay. So I'd like to explain this new entropy idea in the special case of Z, just because it's going to be easier there, and then it'll generalize to all SOFA groups. So say we have an automorphism of a standard probability space, and we have an observable. So A is a finite set. I'm going to assume it's finite. Okay, so let's let X be a typical element, and we have a sequence, you know, where we just consider the itinerary of X, and then we hit it with phi. So we have a sequence of elements in the set A. The idea is that we're going to count the number of sequences A1 through AN for some N with elements in AI that approximate a typical sequence like this. And we'll look at the asymptotic rate of growth. Okay, so here I'm going to be more specific. W will be a finite set which stands for window. And I'll, so it's my window. I can consider the map phi to the W from X to A to the W. So it maps into this product. For a point X, I just move X by T to the W and then observe it by phi. Okay, so if I push forward the measure, I get a measure on this finite set A to the W. So W is a number because it's a. Oh, I'm sorry. So okay, it's a small W. Yeah. Okay. So I'm just pushing forward this measure. I get a measure on A to the W. This finite set, and I think of this as encoding the local statistics. The W local statistics, to be more specific. Okay, well, let's also say we have a sequence, just a map from 1 to n to our set A. Then we also have a map psi to the W from here to A to the W, which we define like this. Now, in reality, this isn't well defined everywhere, because if J is, let's say, n, and W is some positive number, then that goes out of the domain. But Where this is not well defined, you can just define it arbitrarily. It doesn't matter. It won't matter in what I'm going to say. So define it arbitrarily. J plus W is not in the set. Okay, so I'm going to let U be the uniform measure on this set, uniform probability measure. And push that forward. We get a measure on here. And this encodes the local statistics of this sequence. Okay, so now we have two measures on A to the N. We have one from a sequence, and we also have another one that comes from our dynamical system. Well, we can measure the distance between these two local statistics, just the L1 distance. And the theorem is that entropy can be expressed this way. We consider the number of sequences where the W local statistics are close to the W local statistics of the dynamical system, so within epsilon. We take the asymptotic rate of growth as n tends to infinity, the exponential rate of growth, so take the log and divide by n. Then we let our error tolerance, epsilon, tend to zero, and we take an infimum over all finite subsets of the group. So this is non-trivial to prove, but it's true. And it can be proven using standard entropy tools. But more importantly, it generalizes to all Sophic groups. So what's a Sophic group? Let's say that I'm going to say that sim M is the symmetric group on M things, well, on the set 1 through M. If we have a group, and let's say we have a group and that this is a map, but not necessarily a homomorphism, just a set map. If I have a window in my group, just a finite set, then I consider the good set to be the set of all points P in this set 1 through M, such that this sigma is behaving like a homomorphism, at least when we apply it to P and when we restrict to W. So sigma of F times G at P is sigma of F sigma G at P. Okay, and also it's acting like a free homomorphism. So if F is not G, then these two are not equal. So I'll say that sigma is a W epsilon approximation if this good set is large. So it's at least a 1 minus epsilon fraction of the total. Okay, if we have a sequence of maps like this, we'll say it's a Sophic approximation if it's a WI epsilon I approximation. So the group, the error tolerance is going to zero, and the finite sets are tending to the group. This is so G is a Sophic group if it has a Sophic approximation. LEF groups are a kind of a related concept defined by Gordon and Virchik earlier than the concept of Sophic groups. So Gromov defined this step, defined Sophic, and Benji Weiss gave it its name. Residually finite groups are Sophic, so there's an old result of Malchev which says that all finitely generated linear groups are residually finite. And if a group is Sophic if and only if all of its finitely generated subgroups are Sophic. So this implies that all linear groups are Sophic. Also, amenable groups are Sophic. That's easy to prove just using a Fulner sequence. And it's not known whether or not all countable groups are Sophic. Still unknown. But for example, the free Burnside groups, it's not known whether or not those are SOFIC. Okay, so let's say we have a SOFIC group and a dynamical system, so G is acting on X mu. And we have a SOFIC approximation, so we have a sequence of maps, which is asymptotically a homomorphism. Well, they're asymptotically multiplicative and asymptotically free. Let's say we have a measurable map to a finite set. And the idea is that we're going to count the number of observables from 1 through MI into our finite set that approximate this system with this observable. So the idea is that we're taking, you know, we have G acting on X and mu, and we have an observable phi, and what we're thinking is that G almost acts on this set M sub I. It doesn't have to be an actual action, but it could be. This finite set. Ui is the uniform measure, and psi is just some observable. Okay, well, this is just like before. If we have a finite subset of the group, we can define a map. We already have our observable. We can define phi to the W to be this map. So phi to the W of X is phi of WX. So we just move our observation point X by W and then observe it. If we're given a map from 1 through MI into A, then we can do a similar thing. We can just say psi of W is a map to A to the W, defined like this. Sigma, right, is our, remember that sigma is a map from our group into the symmetric group on 1 through MI. Okay, and we can, so this makes sense. So we'll let the distance, we're interested in the L1 distance between the push-forward measures, where U is the uniform measure on 1 through MI. We define the entropy with respect to a SOFIC approximation like this. So we take the, we consider the number of observables where the local statistics of the observable is close to the local statistics of the original observable, phi, the observable on the dynamical system. And we look at the exponential rate of growth and then take the infimum over the error tolerance and the infimum over all finite subsets of the group. And the main theorem parallels Kolmogorov's theorem that if we have two generating observables, and these are, A is a finite set, so these are finite observables that are going to have finite entropy, then this number is the same. So we can define the entropy of the system to be this number. So this is the entropy with respect to the SOFIC approximation. Now, as it turns out, if G is an amenable group, then this entropy just coincides with the classical entropy. So I gave a proof of this which is kind of complicated, and David Kerr and Hansang Li also gave a proof, which I think is nice. Anyway, but in general, if G is not an amenable group, then this number could depend on the choice of SOFIC approximation. So you actually have more than one invariant in principle. Okay, if we apply this to the Bernoulli shift over the group, we just get the entropy of the base space.
It's
I don't think that I don't actually think that this is known. I mean, of course, there are examples for some groups, but I don't think that it's known for every SOFA group. Well, it's easy to come up with examples for just about any, you know, any explicit group. I mean, it's easy to do something like, say, you have one SOFIC approximation, and you can kind of, there's a sense in which you can take a disjoint union of it with itself. And if your original SOFIC approximation was strongly ergodic in a certain sense, then it's going to be able to approximate, then it will not be able to approximate anything that's not strongly ergodic. But the disjoint union might be able to. So, anyway. Okay, well, here's a very short proof sketch of the main theorem. So the main theorem is that if we have two generating observables, then their entropy rates are the same. Well, I'll say that two observables are equivalent if the partitions that they induce agree up to measure zero. And really, I'm just interested in the partitions. For the sake of the proof, I only need the partitions. Okay. So they're the same if they induce the same partitions. So I'll let script P be just the set of partitions with finite entropy. The Rockland distance on this space of partitions is defined like this. Okay. So phi refines psi. Well, you know what that means in terms of partitions. This is one way it can be expressed in terms of entropy. It's up to measure zero, of course. So I'll say that phi and psi are combinatorially equivalent if there are finite sets, k and l, such that phi to the k refines psi and psi to the l refines phi. So basically, if I consider phi and I look at all of its translates under under a window k, then I can recover psi from that and vice versa. Okay, so well, one of the theorems is that if we have a generator, then its combinatorial equivalence class is dense in the space of all generating observables. This is a very useful result. Well, at least it is for this theorem. Seems like it should be more generally useful. I don't know. That this is true for any group, by the way. Doesn't depend on sophicity. This entropy is upper semi-continuous. It's not too hard to prove. What it means is that, or why it's true, rather, is that if you have two observables that are very close, then anything that approximates one of them is going to approximate the other with maybe a slight error. That's the reason why it's true. Okay, if you have two that are combinatorially equivalent, then their entropies are the same. You prove this by saying if you take phi and you split it by, you consider phi to the k, where k is some window, then you can prove, by an inductive argument, that the entropy doesn't change. And that's the idea behind this. Okay, well, these three statements imply the main theorem. We know that combinatorially equivalent observables give the same entropy, and this is upper semi-continuous, and since the combinatorial equivalence class is dense, that's it. Well, this is a little bit more detail, but I don't want to, I think I'll skip it. Here are some applications. If we have a dynamical system, it induces a cross product from Neumann algebra. So this is just the the L2 space of the group and the L2 space of X mu, and we take their product. So we get a Hilbert space that way. Then we have L infinity of this acting in the obvious way, and we also have G acting on the product. And the algebra that generates when we take its weak closure, we get a von Neumann algebra. If the action is ergodic and free and G is infinite, and has, I guess this is it in general, then this is a 2-1 factor. And it's a major problem, of course, to classify these in terms of the group action data. Here's a well-known theorem of Kahn. If G is infinite and amenable, and this action is free and ergodic, then the cross product of Neumann algebra is hyperfinite, so all the algebras are isomorphic. We'll say that two such systems are von Neumann equivalent, then, if their cross product von Neumann algebras are isomorphic. Popa proved that if G has infinite conjugacy classes, that's what ICC means, and it's a property T group, then any two von Neumann equivalent Bernoulli shifts are isomorphic. Okay, so this means that if in addition we assume G is sophic and Ornstein, then in fact Bernoulli shifts you can classify the cross product of Neumann algebras of these Bernoulli shifts. They're classified by base measure entropy. All of these hypotheses are satisfied when G is PSLNZ. So these are actually not onerous hypotheses. It's a long list, but many groups satisfy them, many interesting groups. Okay, two systems are orbit equivalent if you have a measure space isomorphism that maps orbits to orbits, almost every orbit to almost every orbit. So it's well known from Dai's work and also Kahn-Feldman-Weiss. If we have two infinite amenable groups and their actions are ergodic and free, then they're orbit equivalent. So for amenable groups, there isn't much to say about, well, I don't know. There's a lot of interesting things that people have proven, but they're all the same up to orbit equivalence. Probability measure preserving actions. Akita proved that for mapping class groups, you have a very strong form of orbit equivalence rigidity, which is very striking. So any mapping class group of a genus G surface with n holes satisfying a very mild condition, this only rules out a finite number of possibilities. Then if you have a free action that's ergodic, it's strongly orbitally rigid. And actually, it also has to be aperiodic, which means that any finite index subgroup has to act ergodically. I forgot to put that hypothesis down, but that's required in his theorem. So it's strongly orbitally rigid. This means that if you have any free ergodic action, this doesn't have to be the same group, this G2, and it's orbit equivalent to the original system, then in fact it has to be isomorphic. So in particular, the groups have to be isomorphic. Okay, well, so if G is one of these mapping class groups, then the Bernoulli shifts are classified by base measure entropy. In fact, you get from this, modulo a few caveats, you almost get that that entropy is a is an invariant under orbit equivalence. For most systems, for a lot of systems. Maybe it's true for all of them, but not known. Okay, well, I want to look at the special case of free groups because there's a special formula for entropy for free groups. It's kind of interesting, but for its own sake. Okay, so let's say we have a free group of rank R, and we have an observable. Then I'm going to define this quantity, capital F of phi. So it's defined like this. It's the entropy, the Shannon entropy of phi, and multiplied by minus 2R minus 1. R is the rank of the free group. And I consider the Shannon entropy of phi joined with phi composed with a translate, SI. The S's here are the generators of the free group. Then I'll let little f be this infimum. So BEN here denotes the ball of radius n in the free group with respect to the word metric. The main theorem is Perelel's Kolmogorov theorem, that if we have two generating partitions, and A is a finite set, but actually countable will do, then as long as it has finite entropy, then these little f's are the same. I call this the f invariant. I didn't know what to call it when I found it. So that's why I'm still calling it that. So we can define the f invariant of the dynamical system to be f of phi 1, where phi 1 can be any generating observable. If one exists, otherwise, it's not defined. The F invariant of the Bernoulli shift is just its base space. This is the entropy of the base space. So this is a sort of an alternative notion of entropy for free groups, but it turns out to have to actually be, in some sense, a special case of sophic entropy, in a disguised form. To explain, for each n, let's say we choose a homomorphism from the free group into sim n at random. So there's only finitely many homomorphisms. In fact, there are n factorial to the R of them, because you just have to choose, where the generators go. Okay, so I'm going to define the following quantity, which is a lot like sophic entropy. At least it looks like it. So we consider the number of, if we have one of these sigma sub n's, then we can consider the number of observables on 1 through 10 to the A that have close to the same local statistics as the observable on the dynamical system. But now we're choosing our sigma sub n at random, so we'll take the expected number, and then we'll take the exponential growth rate of that, and we'll take the infimum over all error tolerances and the infimum over all finite subsets. And this is the same thing as F. It would be very interesting to me, at least, if this generalized to more groups than just the free group, by the way. I think that it does. I've done some work for things like surface groups, and it seems to work there. But there isn't very much of a general theory, it seems like it should go beyond, way beyond, you know, just free groups and things that look like free groups, such as surface groups. Okay, well, I thought I would show you some examples of calculations, because this is the, one of the main advantages to this entropy is that it's very easy to compute. The sylphic entropy in general looks like it's very hard to compute, and you know, except for Bernoulli shifts, let's say. But this, by in contrast, is easy. So here are some examples. I'm just setting some notation here. I have a somewhat different way of thinking about or representing Markov chains. It's a little different than the standard convention. So I have two states, purple and brown. They're both getting measure 1/2. These are not the transition probabilities. What this is, instead, is the probability of being in state brown, the probability of being in purple and then transitioning to brown is epsilon, and vice versa. And no, actually, these are the transition probabilities. I'm sorry, I'm confusing myself. These are the transition probabilities. So if you're in purple, the probability of transitioning to brown is epsilon. The probability of staying in purple is 1 minus epsilon. Okay, so if we have a Markov chain like this, of course, we can get a sequence, and we have a probability measure on sequences of browns and purples. Okay, this is the Cayley graph of the free group on two generators. Well, we can also consider the same kind of thing for the free group. If we're at purple, then the probability of transitioning to brown is epsilon. And we can do this on all of the edges. So does it make sense? So we just choose a color for the identity element, and then we can just move out from the identity. But the measure that we get by this, it might not look like it's invariant, but in fact it is. It's invariant under shifts. Okay. So let's let mu epsilon be the probability measure that's determined by this process. And we have an observable which just tells us the color at the identity element. Magenta is purple. Okay, so we can compute this capital F very easily. It's just a simple formula. But the amazing thing is that little f is capital F for Markov chains. You can define Markov chains more generally, and it's true more generally. So we've computed the entropy of the system. It's this. Here's another interesting observation. Suppose that epsilon is zero. If epsilon is zero, there's no transitions. So the system is either, you know, you either get all purple or all brown. So there's only two points, and they get measure 1/2 each. And it's a non-ergodic system because they're both preserved. Well, if you plug in zero here, this term goes away, and you get minus log 2. So the entropy is a negative log 2, which may seem strange. But it can happen that the F invariant takes negative values. This is not a mistake. Because the expectation here, you're taking an expectation of an integer, but that could be a number between 0 and 1. So when you take the log, it can be negative. You can get a negative rate of growth. Okay, well, I'm almost out of time, so I'm going to skip this. Oh, actually, Jonathan is here, so... Well, I'm almost out of time, so I feel like being kind of quick. Okay, well, I guess I'll say it. I only have a few slides left, so I guess I can take the time. Okay, so let's say we have a compact separable group, and we have a group automorphism, and it fixes a normal subgroup. Yasvinsky proved that the entropy of the automorphism acting on this compact group with respect to Haar measure is just the entropy on the normal subgroup plus the entropy that's of the induced action on the quotient. And we now know that this is true when you generalize to free groups and the F invariants. So I proved this in some special cases, but Yannitz and Goodman proved it in the general case. Okay, so in particular, let's say that, so here we have a nice compact group. We have Z mod 2Z to the F. And we have this nice normal subgroup of all zeros and all ones. So zero is just the zero elements, one is the constant function one. Ornstein's and Weiss's example is that G mod N is isomorphic to G cross G. Okay, so that tells us, okay, by this theorem, this is supposed to be true. So the action here, you know, we have this formula, and it works. The entropy of this is just log 2. That's the entropy of the full 2 shift. This is the entropy of the full 4 shift, and this is minus log 2. these are a bunch of sort of ideas and things. I'm very interested in this new approach developed by Hanfeng Li and David Kerr. So they have a new definition of sophic entropy, both in the measurable category and in the topological category, which extends what I've told you, and it's very interesting. Okay, well, one of the problems that I'm very interested in is whether or not Ornstein theory extends to free groups, or in fact any non-amenable group. So there are a lot of open questions. For example, Ornstein proved that, well, in fact, so Sinai proved that that any positive entropy system factors onto a Bernoulli shift with the same entropy. So that's true for Z, and in fact it's been, you know, it's been extended to any amenable group by Ornstein and Weiss. And that's not known for free groups or for any non-amenable group. Factors of Bernoulli shifts. Well, it's not known. So Ornstein proved that all factors of Bernoulli shifts are isomorphic to Bernoulli shifts. And this is not known for any non-amenable group. It's known to be false for property T groups by a construction of Popa and Sasek. It's an easy construction, but it's interesting. Mixing Markov chains over free groups have not been classified over free groups. But for Z, it's known that they're all isomorphic to Bernoulli shifts. And so maybe that has to be false for free groups for easy reasons. I showed you some Markov chains with negative F invariant. So those cannot be isomorphic to Bernoulli shifts. Okay, so that's all the time I have.